Law firm.
Growth.
New reality.
You are listening to
How to Grow Your Law Firm
from Home
Without Losing Your Mind.
Brought to you by
How to Manage
a Small Law Firm.
Growing law firms is our business.
Welcome to How to Grow Your Law Firm from Home Without Losing Your Mind. My name is Julie McKenzie, and today we have Sharon Torek from Torek with Torek Law as our guest. Sharon, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Oh, hi, Julie. I'm glad to be here with you.
All right. Before we get into this, we know right now with the pandemic raging and everything, everyone's forced to work from home. There's a lot of disruptions, but we at How to Manage a Small Law Firm, we really see this as a huge, huge advantage. And you in particular have an extra huge advantage because you've actually been running your law firm remotely for many years now. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. And actually, my current firm was built very purposefully to be mobile and remote. So, and I'm sure we'll talk about that as we get into the conversation.
Yep.
Definitely. So, yeah. This was founded to be a virtually operated law firm.
So tell us a little bit about your firm and why you founded it as a virtual law firm.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So Torek Law provides, we help marketing and creative services agencies nationwide protect their assets and turn their intellectual capital into revenue. And what that means is that we assist them with intellectual property clearance and protection issues. We help them negotiate good, strong business relationships with their clients. We help them put together good freelance networks with independent contractors. And we help them in areas like influencer marketing, social media marketing, and advertising compliance.
Excellent. So when did your firm open?
This firm opened in 2000 and let's see, we're coming up on, I have to think about this for a minute. This is 2020 as you and I are sitting here talking.
Yes.
Today. 2016.
Okay. So you've been in business for 4 years. How right. successful was your firm, say, 3 or 4 years ago?
Well, so the first year was partial year. So I would say our first year in business, we probably did about $70,000 in revenue, just getting our systems up and running and our feet wet, transitioning my clients that came with me from my former firm to this firm. Currently, we're probably on track to do, well, we have big plans this year. We'll see.
Yeah.
But we're probably on track to do around $350,000.
Perfect. So now in the interest of full disclosure for everyone listening to this, we should mention that I am one of the 30 outside fractional timeshare trusted advisors with a company called How to Manage a Small Law Firm. How to Manage a Small Law Firm is the leading, largest, biggest, and best provider of outside managing partner, chief operating officer, and chief financial officer services, exclusively for the solo and small law firm market. And in the interest of full disclosure, Sharon, we should probably let everyone know that How to Manage a Small Law Firm functions as the CEO and COO of your law firm. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
So when you started this firm, you said it was a decision that you made to go virtual. Why did you make that decision?
Well, you know, I had had the experience of working as a partner in two prior small law firms. My first experience with it was with two other attorneys, and we had a really kind of a general small business focused practice. And this was, I'd be dating myself to mention some of the technology specifically, but suffice it to say at the time that, you know, operating in the cloud was not an option. Operating remotely, really challenging to do in a very professional way. Everything was very clunky. You know, you needed an expensive phone system. You needed a dedicated computer server. And if you want, and at the time, it was pretty unique to even network two computers together, believe it or not.
No, I remember those days.
Yeah. And then my firm prior to founding my current firm was a little more advanced with systems procedures, but still very tied to the old enterprise way of thinking where you needed a lot of costly equipment. It was hard to be nimble. You had to be in a common physical space to really work at scale. And that just felt like baggage to me by the time I was ready to found my current firm. The other real consideration for me, Julie, was that I knew that the client base for this new firm was not going to be specifically regional. And so I was going to have to be nimble enough to serve clients all over the country anyway. And so it felt like being intentional about mobility and the virtual nature of our work was going to be super important.
Excellent. So working virtually really works for you.
Yeah, it has been a godsend to us right now. You know, we were doing it before our current pandemic situation by choice. And I don't like to throw the word blessed around too often because I think it's overused, but we are super fortunate that we already had our systems, our processes in place for working as a dispersed team prior to being required to work remotely. It made things a lot more simple for us in every good sense of that word.
Exactly. So let's talk about your daily routines, because I have the pleasure of getting to work with you as one of your trusted advisors. So I know that you do have a physical office located in the near your where you live.
So
what was your reasoning for that?
So, well, first of all, I'm super fortunate that you and I get to work together.
Thank you.
You've really been good at making sure. I mean, you don't give us a pass on anything just because we're virtual.
Exactly.
I'm glad about it. We operate in the same realm in terms of systems, procedures, policies as a virtual firm as we would if we were brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. I choose to have a small dedicated office for a couple of reasons that are really kind of personal to me. Mm-hmm. At the time, I still had a few more locally based clients, and I wanted to have a meeting place for them. My husband and I are both business owners. He mm-hmm. happens to own the real estate in our home dedicated to office space. So he already we have a really nice, pretty office at home, and it's his corporate headquarters, if you will. So there wasn't a logical place for me to work in the house. And I know that sounds like a luxury now when people have had to set up in their kitchens and their dining rooms, which is where I am, by the way.
Right. Okay.
So I wanted to have the office space just for the ability to have a quiet, dedicated space to work. But I could have just as easily chosen to do that in a spare room in our home or something. I also liked being in an urban environment, which is where my office is located.
So you're moving your office to your home during the pandemic wasn't as big of an issue for you, if at all. Just because you're so used to working remotely as it is. Okay.
Honestly, it involved literally purchasing one thing, and that was an extra computer monitor because I didn't feel like dragging the one that I have in my office.
Home. Yeah.
That was it.
So let me ask you some practical things. I want to take you through the 7 parts of a business, because right now, during the pandemic, there's hundreds of thousands of lawyers all over the country who have their own office and they really don't know how to work from home. And some of them are really freaking out right now. You can see it from the out of office responses that we're getting here at How to Manage. It's really ridiculous the things people are saying in these out of office responses. They're basically just quitting. And so I'd like to see if we could go through each part of the 7 parts of the business to see how you cover everything as a virtual firm.
Yeah, so let's do it.
Talk to me about what are some of the ways that you market your virtual firm?
So we do a number of things. From the simplest, I would say, is our electronic monthly newsletter, which goes out to a mailing list of about 1,000. We are active on social media, on LinkedIn, and also on Twitter. I choose not to use Facebook for my business marketing simply because it's not where my client base tends to spend time. And I'm sort of the belief that you have to dedicate yourself to a couple channels. Some social media,
sense.
Electronic newsletter. I have a weekly podcast for our client base of marketing agencies. And
what is your podcast? Give us a plug.
Yeah, it's called The Innovative Agency.
Okay.
And it is geared towards owners and leaders of marketing agencies. And we talk about future leaning topics related to owning and operating a marketing agency. And I interview agency owners. I interview agency industry experts and consultants. It is entirely not legal, and it is entirely geared towards innovation in my clients' industry. And that was very purposeful.
Excellent.
Yeah. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy having conversations about my clients' industry. So that's one thing we do. I do quite a bit of industry conference speaking.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say I spend next to no time at things like bar association functions or speaking at bar association or legal conferences. And that's just been a deliberate choice I've made to put my time and energy into my clients' industry rather than to network peer-to-peer with other lawyers. And, you know, it's possible you miss some opportunities doing that way. And I think it depends on your practice area
right. Also
on where you need to spend your time. But that's another way that we market. And then finally do quite a bit of webinar guest speaking or webinar conducting.
Okay.
I would say those are our primary marketing channels.
So really the one thing you're probably missing now is your in-person speaking engagements, but you have webinars, so you've probably moved some of that to a webinar base.
Yeah, and I have possibly. I have to tell you that you happen to know, because you and I interact on a regular basis since you're my COO, that being on the road is wonderful, and there's a lot of ways you cannot substitute for that in-person communication when you see people at conferences or things like that. But the amount of space it has given me to work on my business in other ways, including other marketing ideas and channels, has just been amazing. So
excellent.
I encourage everybody to take advantage of whatever time they're conserving by having to be remotely based now during these times to pour that time back into your business in a really purposeful way. Netflix is great, but I wouldn't be spending any more time on that than you might if you had to go to the office every day.
That is excellent advice. So with all the marketing that you're doing and you start to get new clients in, how do you handle when a new client calls? Like, who answers your phone? Who handles the sales piece? Can you tell us a little bit about your sales process?
So it's going to sound a little crazy because when I've shared this story with other lawyers who are in my community, including fellow HTM members, they kind of laugh at me, but a lot of our sales are handled via email communications.
Oh, excellent.
Well, this is the beauty of spending your time in one particular niche. I mean, despite its limitations, you end up being able to develop a reputation. And so the referrals, by the time they come to you, you can sometimes conduct the sales, what would be called the consultation or a sales conversation, via email communications. Now, that doesn't work for everybody. And so when you can't do that, all of our sales conversations are held by telephone, and in a few cases here and there by Zoom video conference.
Okay.
And does that go ahead?
Do one of those work better than the other, or do they all kind of work just in each individual situation?
I haven't had enough of a track record to say whether we'd have more success. I will tell you, I had three sales consultations. I call them consultations or strategy mm-hmm. sessions. We don't really have to do much selling during these appointments, but we had three on Friday, and all three resulted in work.
Excellent.
But I haven't been doing the video that long, so I'm not sure if, you know, one is more limiting than the other. We typically
right.
do them via telephone conversations.
So, well, now that Zoom is the hottest thing, you're probably going to do more by Zoom, I would think.
I really kind of liked it. It gave mm-hmm. us more of that, what's missing, of course, and what I think some of the people listening to this might be thinking about is what that across the table interaction mm-hmm. where you can see body language and make eye contact. And, you know, I will admit, you know, you're missing some of that in a truly remote setting. So I think video conferencing would be the best way to replicate that, but there's an art to doing it appropriately so that, you know, your prospect is comfortable as well. So I don't have hard and fast tips yet for doing it via video.
Right.
But I can tell you that the individuals with whom I was speaking were perfectly comfortable asking me questions, and I was perfectly comfortable, you know, going through the normal process we'd go through of gathering information and having a conversation to lead to a sale, as I would be on a phone conversation.
Excellent. Okay. So then once this person or this company becomes your client, talk about, you work virtually with all your clients. How do you handle your client meetings?
So we handle our client meetings via either telephone conference, or it's more likely we would do a video if we actually had to get together and review a contract together, or they needed me to do some group consultations with team members. You know, our agency clients sometimes like to have multiple team members in on a call so that we're more efficient in terms of how we communicate information. So it is either Zoom video conference sessions or it's telephone calls. It is almost never in person, one-to-one.
Nice. Now, do you ever get the opportunity to meet in person? You said you have some local clients to your smaller office. Okay.
We do. We have sometimes, if we have a regional or local client, they'll arrange to come to the office so that we can have a meeting. Sometimes I will coordinate client meetings with an event that we're going to be both attending. If we're both attending the same conference and I know that there might be some help that they might need, or I might want to reach out to them to do a keep in touch call, we'll meet in person there and either do lunch or coffee or whatever, so that we can treat it as, you know, a purposeful social / business conversation.
Right. So what do you do about your billing, and how do you handle it when a client needs to pay you?
We use Clio as our practice management systems, and we integrate Clio with, a credit card processing service called LawPay. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are competing products to that out there. You know better than I, Julie, about which ones those are.
Yeah, and we don't tend to recommend, but that just happens to be the system that you're using.
I'm just telling you what I use. So we use an electronic practice management system. We use an electronic payment system that integrates with it. And when we're engaging with a new client, we prepare an engagement agreement, which we email to them. We get their signature on it. We have not yet evolved to electronic signatures or electronic generation of engagement letters. That is something we need to get our systems evolved to a point. We have the technology to be able to do it. We're just simply handling it manually still.
Haven't made that step yet. Okay.
No, we haven't. And I think as our volume increases, we're going to have to. Mm-hmm. So we would use those tools I mentioned to do that. But we generate the engage agreement. We get it to the client. They pay their retainer via credit card before we get started with their project. If they're an existing client of ours and this is a new matter for them, a new project for them, then, you know, unless we've had a payment issue with them in the past, we would bill them on completion, or we would make some sort of installment arrangement with them.
Okay.
Paying for the project. And then we'd bill them through our electronic billing system. And they'd we tell the clients, and we sometimes have mixed success with this because we're a B2B law firm, and some of our clients are still set up to pay our bills with a check. And so that's one reason I have to physically stop at the office or be in the office. I could easily get the mail forwarded if I wanted
to. Okay. So you have physical mail that comes to your office still?
I do. Very little, but there are those few clients who still pay by check. And so when they send a check, obviously you want to be there to get it.
Exactly.
We've been able to get them to mostly pay electronically though, so that we have as little of that as possible.
Nice. So how do you handle answering your phones? Let's talk about that when somebody calls you.
We use an outside reception phone answering service.
Okay.
And with a dedicated toll-free telephone number. And so if a client or a prospect calls us on the phone, that's where those calls go. And then they get routed to the designated individual's cell phone, or that answering service will take a message and email and text that message to me or to my team, depending on who it's for. And then we'll replay, you know, we will return the call just like we would in any normal situation.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, again, we're not a high telephone call volume firm. If we were, we might need to build more structure and process around having minimum amounts of time between when we get a call and when we return it, things like that. As it is, we're able to respond in a reasonable amount of time. And we do actually have policies around this. I don't think we look at them that often because we're pretty efficient at responding with our current workload. But, you know, as you get busier, and for the benefit of folks listening, if you're a high volume practice, then you obviously need to build more structure around this.
Right. So you mentioned your staff. Tell me a little bit about your staff. Who do you have on your team?
I have an operations manager who was my executive assistant before we brought another individual on for that role. And she handles really sort of management of the operations of the firm, including collaborating with you, Julie, on our processes and our procedures, managing our billing process, managing projects. She runs and owns our project management system so that we're sure we're keeping client deliverables moving and that we know what the status of those matters are. And she also supports me in a paralegal capacity on in one of our practice areas. And then I have an executive assistant who handles administrative matters and also marketing support. And I've got a marketing contractor, sort of a marketing coordinator, who handles some writing for us, social media strategy, and, you know, special projects. So the two of them sort of tag team on my marketing support. The podcast is produced by a third-party vendor to the firm. So we work hand-in-hand with them to do guest recruitment and production for the podcast. And then I have two contract lawyers, one who primarily supports me on the advertising law practice side, and one who assists on the trademark side.
And do each of your staff members, where do they work from? Their homes?
Yes, home-based. Yeah, everybody's home-based. One is in another city in my home state. One is in another state that happens to adjoin my state. That was just coincidence. And I've got, my trademark attorney is in Southern Ohio. I've got an advertising attorney in Florida. So we're kind of all over the place.
Do you have challenges dealing with different time zones? Or do you guys all happen?
No, sometimes it can make for a longer day for me if a client needs to speak to me, and it sort of stretches your day out because they're 3 hours behind us.
Right. If they're on the Pacific coast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Correct. But you know, you just make it work. And that's one of the benefits of also doing a lot of communication electronically comes into play, because it's not hard. At least it hasn't been for us so far to sort of manage those communications at off hours, and we're sort of conditioned to do that. I happen to have two team members who sort of like being fluid in their work hours, and we have a practice that enables us to do it. Not every law firm is cut out to be able to, you know, to tolerate people taking breaks during the day and working in off hours and things like that. For us, it works. It might not work for other firms, but I would encourage everybody listening to really think hard about whether you're telling yourself a story about the hours that that person has to be available if they're working remotely, or whether there's a true need for them to be in a more, you know, 8 to 5 availability pattern for you.
That's an excellent point. I'm really glad you said that. So speaking of like flexibility and having a fluid schedule for your staff members, do you find that more challenging to help remote your manage your remote staff? Like, what are some of the challenges that you face when managing your staff remotely?
So I think some, well, I, you know, the one challenge is building the water cooler culture has to be really deliberate. You have to really think about ways to make everybody feel included in the goals of the firm. You have to be very deliberate about making sure that you don't forget to loop somebody in to conversations. And I will call myself out. There have been a couple occasions where I haven't done this as well as I've needed to. I've told one team member, but neglected to copy another team member, not for no reason, just accidentally. And then that team member, you know, wasn't up to speed on what was going on with that detail. And it was simply because they hadn't been looped in appropriately. So, you know, I'd overswing in favor of over-communicating rather than under-communicating. You got to balance the not wanting to bomb everybody's email box with the downside of not telling somebody something important.
Right.
We are thinking about moving to Slack, which is, you know, that's just a channel we're looking at, but we're looking at some sort of team collaboration tool that would enable us to communicate outside of the bounds of email so that it could create more, it could enhance our sense of community beyond us having to just check our email inboxes all the time.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you about the technologies you use. So we can go that route now. What other technologies do you use that, because I know you guys have a few different ways you communicate as a team.
We do. We use Voxer, which is a two-way radio app that my understanding is it's not that new. It was new to me when it got recommended to me. I think by you, actually, Julie.
Probably. It's a walkie-talkie app. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've used it since we pretty much founded the firm. And it's a quick way to message each other. Our normal escalation is this. If it's a normal business project, question, whatever, we'll email one another. If we need to escalate it because we need a faster answer, then we will use Voxer and communicate with each other. If it's truly like house on fire, then we will text one another. And if that's not working, I don't think this has ever happened, but if something's really an emergency, then we will, you know, obviously call each other. But that's sort of our escalation pattern. Like I said, we are looking into to adding a collaboration tool such as Slack so that we can communicate as a team that way for the normal course of business stuff.
How do you keep track of your projects and things like that? I know you said you have Clio.
Yes.
Which I think you guys use.
We're actually transitioning at the moment. We're experimenting with something new. We've been using Trello, which is a very simple project management tool. And it's super, super easy. It's not perhaps as robust as some of the folks listening to this might need it to be for building workflows and things like that. We are now experimenting with a tool called Legal Boards, which looks and feels like Trello, but also happens to integrate with our practice management system so that we could build workflows. You know, to those who are, you know, not current HTM members, which if you're not, you should be, but you would have heard of something called a SKU, which is, remind me what SKU stands for.
Stock keeping unit.
Okay. So what that means for you, if you own and run a law firm, is what are all the steps that you need to take to get a client deliverable out the door, right?
What does it cost you?
Right. And what does it cost you? And so what Legal Boards is, I think, going to help us do eventually is build all the steps into Legal Boards, which will then create tasks in our practice management system. So I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole, but we're going to, I think, evolve to that next so that we have very clear steps and procedures so that anybody could replicate the work or
right. And then,
how we deliver work product to our clients.
And then each one of your team members will have access to that, and they'll be able to see who's working on what step. Is that correct?
Correct. Who's assigned to what and what the status of it might be at any given time.
So basically who's doing what by when.
Correct. Exactly. Excellent. And then as far as actually communicating with each other on a regular basis, we have weekly team meetings, which we may need to evolve them to do more frequently, but we every Monday we have an hour long all team meeting by Zoom. I also have regular billing meetings with my operations manager, and I have a regular marketing check-in call with my executive assistant just to see if they need anything from me to keep those projects moving along or to make sure that I've downloaded everything I need to for billing. Because as anybody listening to this knows, lawyers tend to not be so hot at getting their billing in on time. It's not a fun part of what we do. And almost all of us need help, and I call myself out totally in that regard as well. So the purpose of that call is really accountability for me, so that if there's information that needs to be input, you know, time needs to be recorded or a charge needs to be input, that we use that time as a download there so I can give her the information.
Right. But when you put a process in place, you followed it, Sharon. So I would give you kudos for doing a much better job in that area.
I'm trying.
You're doing great.
I am so much better now than I was a year ago. That's for sure.
Excellent. So does your team have regular meetings without you? Do they also meet without you?
They do. My operations manager meets with you without me. And my operations manager and my exec assistant also meet for training purposes on a regular basis. So that, my executive assistant is newer to the firm. And so is still learning some of the things, although she's been such a quick study that it's really, I think, just a check-in from them. And I do want to mention in terms of training, because we're talking about tools right now.
Right.
My operations manager did implement some video and screencasts, which I think she probably used Zoom for, to create training, simple training materials about this is how we do this, this is how we do that. She would use screen sharing and screen grabbing. And so that's a really easy way of creating a training archive with just somebody talking about what they do and how they do it by showing their screen and using their voice and just hitting record. And you can archive those and kind of turn them into a virtual training manual.
Yep. And you can link the video into your policies and procedures as well.
Absolutely.
So excellent. So when you do have performance issues, how do you handle those performance issues being you're virtual, you can't just walk down the hall?
Yeah, I would say how you handle them sort of depends upon what the expectations that you've set in terms of your minimum standards and also your culture and what your communication style is like. I happen to be a pretty direct person. I really don't do well in environments where there's passive aggression. In other words, somebody's getting annoyed about something but not saying anything about it. That doesn't work well for me. So I tend to be a nip in the bud early kind of a girl. Mm-hmm. So if I have a concern or a question, and this has been a growth exercise for me too, honestly, Julie, because I do tend to be a control freak, and I do I know other lawyers who feel that way too about the way. So if something's not being done the way I think it should be done, or I'm just not sure about how it's being handled, I have the conversation as early as possible and as plainly as possible. I wish I had some magic to tell you about, you know, some guidelines for that, but as immediately as is humanly possible, we have the conversation.
Which would be the same if you were in an office together. So there's really not much difference between managing a staff in that way and dealing with performance issues virtually or in person.
Right. Right. And then we do have regular intermittent, performance reviews, which
when you do, your performance reviews on Zoom?
We do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We do them on Zoom. Cause I think it's important to have that face-to-face communication. Exactly. I think the first couple with my ops manager, when she was still my assistant, we might have done by telephone, but we do them all by Zoom now.
Okay. Yeah. So when you're recruiting for a virtual workforce, do you have certain criteria or qualities that you look for in a potential employee?
Well, I kind of feel at this point in the life cycle of my firm that I want to bring people on who have already had some experience working virtually, whether that means they were remote for a day a week or something at their current job, or whether they worked virtually in the past. I think that is as important to how they're going to fit into our culture as some other skills that we might need them to have, you know, on the legal or the business side of the equation. And so I'm really looking for, I am fortunate in that I didn't have to go through the exercise of transitioning a brick and mortar talent force to a remote workforce. We were sort of already built that way. And so I really want to bring people on in the future who have already had some experience working this way. And the good news for all of us is that at this point, as you and I sit here and have this conversation, that's everybody.
I was just going to say your talent pool just broadened in an extraordinary amount.
It did. And so did the talent pool of everybody who's listening to this, who's thinking about taking their teams remotely, because now when they recruit, it is inevitable that just about everybody they talk to is going to have had experience doing their job or doing a job remotely, virtually.
Right.
So that's sort of trial by fire for everybody who's going to need to be hiring when things sort of rebalance in the business world.
Exactly. Right. So we talked a little bit about some of the technologies that you do use. Is there something that you could not live without as a virtual law firm owner? Is there one technology that you really couldn't see yourself living without?
I think all of us kind of feel like we want to say Zoom right now. And so I feel that way too. But yeah, if it wasn't Zoom, I would have to say that I first got exposed to our practice management system when I was breaking away from my old firm and planning to start this new one. It just changed my life in terms of the ability to that and my cloud storage application. Between our practice management system and our cloud storage application, which we happen to use Box. There are a number of them out there. But I can operate my business, and just about every mandatory task I have to do can be accomplished with my mobile phone and a little bit of privacy. So that just blew my mind because I came from a firm with my former partner where we spent thousands of dollars on telephone equipment and a dedicated computer server and the air conditioner that the dedicated computer server needed. And just, you know, all this stuff. And I just didn't want to be burdened by all this stuff. I wanted to be nimble. I wanted to help our clients. And I wanted to be able to focus more on other parts of the business than that. So I would say the practice management system and our cloud storage probably were the most life-changing things for me. And I couldn't live without either of them now, because it's how we manage all and store all of our clients' confidential information, all of our work records, how we bill. It really is the lifeblood of how we run the firm.
Right. So when you have a virtual employee, how do you ensure that they have the right type of equipment to handle working remotely?
Well, you have to sort of, I think, take an inventory of what you need to do your work as the owner of the firm, and then sort of adapt that to the role that they're going to hold. If somebody is going to be your marketing assistant, they're probably going to need access to the kinds of software tools that, you know, your finance person isn't going to need. And so I think it starts with you as the owner. What would you need if you were sitting in every seat in the law firm, which for most of us, We had that experience at some point.
Been there, done that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I assume for the listeners, you know, all of you have been there at some point or another. I certainly have been. So think about what you would need to do every job in your firm, and then and tailor their hardware and their software to those needs. And then in addition to that, you want to have conversations with them about, if they're going to use their own devices, you have to have some understanding about confidentiality and the ability to do things like, you know, remotely wipe the device if it gets lost or something like that, if it's going to store any sort of business information on it. So you need to have those privacy and confidentiality discussions. But yeah, I would just say, think about what you would need if you were sitting in their shoes, and then and ask a lot of questions about the condition of their equipment. When we were, we have some of our team using independently owned devices. And so we kind of go through a mental checklist of how old is it? You know, when did you last upgrade your software? Things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And being that you have cloud-based programs, a lot of times you probably just have to give them access to it, whether you have to buy a license or give them a login.
We do.
So that's probably a little easier.
Correct. We buy enough licenses for the seats that we need. And in some cases, you're allowed to share a license. In other cases, you need to register multiple users.
Right.
So, check with the solutions that you're using and see what their rules are. But, and you need a central repository. This is super important. It would be, I think, even if you were bricks and mortar, but you need a central repository of everybody's login for every single thing that they are able to log into. Because things happen, right? They're unavailable to you, or they lose their information, or their computer software upgrades automatically, and all of a sudden they can't get into stuff they used to get into. So you got to be diligent about, you got to have a policy that if somebody has changed a password, upgraded a password, added one, they had to immediately update that information in whatever central, repository you want to use. We have a special place in our document storage system where we, store that stuff.
All right. Excellent. So here at How to Manage, we teach you to track metrics everywhere, for anything from the leads calling into your office to your consultations set, to your show ups, to your clients, to your revenues, like your AR. Do you find that you had to track different metrics as a virtual firm? Are they the same? Like, what type of, are you using QuickBooks Online to track revenue? Like, this is a very loaded question, but talk about a little bit about your metrics.
So yeah, I've evolved quite a bit in this area. Not as a result of being remote, as a result of working, with coaches who helped me get there. And so, I was terrible at tracking metrics before. For most lawyers who I know, it's one of the least favorite parts about running your business. And so first I focused on traditional bookkeeping numbers. And yes, I use QuickBooks Online, and I have a bookkeeping service that that updates our books. Then I had to focus on making sure that our billing was always up to date. So we had to focus on billing policies to make sure that we were getting bills out and checking on billing in regular increments of time to keep money flowing into the firm. More recently, I'm embarrassed to say, because I should have been doing this for a longer period of time, we are tracking our marketing metrics in a more meaningful way by determining how many new business consults we have in a week, how many of those consults lead to either a new client engagement or a new project from an existing client. Sometimes, that conversion rate, luckily, is very high, but it doesn't always happen immediately. It's not uncommon for us to have a conversation with a client, especially an existing client, and for them to perhaps get back to us a week or 2 weeks after that to give us the bill ahead to bill. So you got to relate back the consultation. So anyway, our marketing and sales metrics are probably the area where we were the least strong, and we're closing the gap on that right now.
If you could see my face, Sharon, I'm smiling ear to ear.
We're not where we need to be, but thank you.
But you're definitely
you
making, and, yes, you're making strides.
And our CEO, we're much farther along than we were.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk about you. How do you take care of you? Do you find it challenging? Like, you do have a brick and mortar place, but do you find it challenging to just leave your office at times, to leave the work behind?
Yeah, this is a moment to get real about this, because I have noticed a difference in the ability to turn it all off at, you know, what might feel like a normal conclusion to the business day, since I've been working primarily at home, mm-hmm. Since the pandemic began. And so I would say you need to be really in tune to the way you like to work best and what energizes you the most. If you're not a morning person and you've got the type of business that lends itself to you being able to start at 10 a.m. and work until whenever, then do that. I think it's less for me these days about time management than it is about energy management. And I think mm-hmm. that's one of the big learnings that, you know, this work at home world has opened up for me, is that it forces you to be a little bit more in tune with your natural rhythms and what works best for you. Now, I'm going to be very candid and say this, it's easy for me to say this because I'm not managing education of children while I'm trying to run my business at home. And I totally admire and take my hat right. off to any of the parents out there who don't have the luxury of setting, you know, a more fluid schedule because they've got other people in the house whose needs they need to consider. And some of those people are minors who need education. So mm-hmm. you have to think about how to manage your energy. And as a leader of your law firm, you've got to figure out how your team members are best at managing their energy. I have one team member who has a husband with medical conditions that need attention. I have another with two very small children. So neither of them are putting in the traditional 8-to-5 work schedule. They're getting their work done when it fits in with the rest of their lives. And you just have to be, I think, a little more open to that possibility. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like heresy probably to somebody who's run a business in a physical office on a very traditional schedule. So I would say that's been a big change that I've become aware of more since I've been home than since I was going into my office. The truth of it was, even when I have an office, I could go in whenever I need to and I can leave whenever I need to. I just was choosing to observe a more traditional work schedule.
Right.
I've noticed that my big challenge has been turning it off at the end of the day because I'm still here. So right. I'm trying to physically get up and leave the room where I'm working while I'm at home and not walk through this part of my home when the work day's over.
Right. That's probably good advice to give, and you need to remember to follow as well.
Yeah.
So any final thoughts on working remotely? Anything, any big advice? I mean, you've given some great advice today, and I appreciate your time, but is there anything else that we haven't covered that you would want somebody to know who's considering work as they work remotely now and maybe is considering staying remote?
Yeah, I think my best advice to you is give yourself and give your team members a little bit of grace as you figure all this out. If you're hard charging, that is a challenge to do. And I say that from personal experience, but you're going to have to think creatively about how to problem solve, how to communicate, and how to push work through when you're not all in the same physical space, but it is possible. Don't throw your hands up because you've never had to do it before and convince yourself that it can't be done with a little creativity. And recruit your team members to be creative and making suggestions about how it can work better for everybody, because they're in this boat with you right now. And so that I guess would be my final takeaway.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate your time today, Sharon. It's been great talking to you in a little bit of a different setting than we normally get to talk.
I know. It's been fun.
Yeah. So this is Julie McKenzie, Management Advisor with How to Manage a Small Law Firm. Please join us next time on How to Grow Your Law Firm Without Losing Your Mind. And until then, stay safe and please stay healthy.
How to Grow Your Law Firm
From Home
Without Losing Your Mind.
Brought to you by
How to Manage
a Small Law Firm.
Growing law firms is our business.